Maybe you saw on our front sign this week that we had a wedding workshop here in the church. I was a little nervous displaying that on the front sign. I thought maybe we'd have like 10 extra couples show up, but we only had those couples that we were expecting. We have 5 couples getting married here at St. Jude's this year, which is not the greatest number, but with everything considered, I'm happy that people are still coming forward to enter into that covenantal, sacramental relationship with one another. Last year, we had 9 couples married, even through all of the restrictions of the pandemic. And again, that was a great sign for our parish that this is an important thing. Even though things might look differently, it's an important thing to move forward. And I shared with them yesterday, as the couples were sitting here and we were going through the ceremony and some of the theology of marriage, of how important it is to continue to invest in their marriage and not just to plan for the wedding day. That's always my goal with a couple, to help them succeed not just in their wedding, but to succeed in their marriage. And I told them that here as a parish and as a community, that we want to continue to support them well after the wedding. Because if they succeed in their marriage and their family, then we succeed. We share as a body in all the members of that body. But if a marriage or a family languishes in our community, then in the same breath, we suffer. And so I promise them that we'll continue to support them and encourage them and give them all the helps they need as they enter into this covenant of love together. Because we well know that many tragedies hit marriages all across our country, all across our world, and our church is not immune to this. That there are many tragic things that happen in marriages, and sometimes those marriages then break up. They dissolve in a certain sense. We see evidence of this all around us. I don't have to tell you. Even this weekend, I saw a headline, Nicolas Cage, the actor from National Treasure and some of these movies. He was raised Catholic, but in Las Vegas earlier this week, he entered his 5th marriage. And they exchanged vows that were partly traditional Catholic vows and partly traditional Shinto vows. Now, I don't share this example in a condemnatory way or an accusatory or a shameful way, but in a way, actually, to reach out to people like Mr. Cage, that there's another way. I wish that I could tell him about God's mercy. I wish that I could tell him about the hope and healing that comes through the annulment process, that the Lord desires greater communion with him to pull him back into greater communion with his church. I wish I could introduce him to some of the couples I've worked with who've really found hope and healing. Because we know, brothers and sisters, that marriage is an important thing. It's an important thing for our church. It's an important thing for our society. Marriage and the family has been called the fundamental cell of society. And if a cell is healthy and flourishing, then the whole body is healthy and flourishing. But if a cell is sick, then we all feel that as a church and even as a society. And we also know that in the church, that marriage between a man and a woman reflects a greater reality that cannot be seen. And that reality is the union of God and his people. When we see a married couple, it's a reflection of the human meeting the divine. That's such an important thing for us to recognize, that marriage has this importance. It's an icon of our relationship with God. And so the church's laws and rules on marriage then aren't some imposition from the Vatican. They're an invitation into this greater reality, this relationship of love that the Lord wants to have with us. that the rules of the church are for our good. And this idea of marriage, of an icon between God and his people, is evident all throughout the scriptures. Even in our first reading today that we have from the book of Exodus, it's been a rabbinic interpretation that the book of Exodus is a love story. We have three parts of that story. The first part is God wooing his bride. We can think of the Israelites who were enslaved in Egypt, and the Lord woos them. He frees them from slavery. He shows them his fidelity in the first part of Exodus. Then in the second part, there's a wedding. There's a union between God and his people. And then in the third part of Exodus, they set up a house together. That the whole book is this beautiful love story between God and his people. And in that second part, the wedding part, we hear the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments. That's what we get in today's reading. And the Ten Commandments have been interpreted as the wedding vows between God and his people. Not just some harsh commandments or impositions, but actually invitations into a greater relationship of love. Vows spoken by God and vows spoken back by the people. And we can look at it through that lens here in the first commandment. You shall have no other gods except me. That's an invitation to exclusivity. That I can't have two covenants going on at the same time. I have to have one covenant with God and God alone. The second commandment, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. This is an invitation of respect, that we'd speak well of one another in this marital covenant. The third commandment, you shall keep holy the Sabbath day. This is an invitation by the Lord that we would spend time with our beloved, that we'd go on dates with him, that we would rest with him. You shall not lie, you shall not cheat, you shall not covet. All of these commandments, interpreted as vows, are a recipe for a successful marriage. If we would understand that greater reality, that they're not just rules, they're not just impositions, but they're for our good. This is the case with all of the commandments. I was able to meet with the kindergartners this week, back by the confessional, and we talked about God's rules and his mercy and his willingness to forgive us. And they were able to get this as kindergartners. One of the little boys, when I asked him, what might a good rule be that God would give us for our good? He said, maybe not stepping on each other's toes. I affirmed him, yeah, that's a good rule. It's for our good, and it's for others' good. It's not just something that we would wag our finger at people. Don't step on people's toes. It's for our ultimate good and our ultimate flourishing. And then in that third part of the book of Exodus, like I said, the people of Israel set up a household with God. This is the tabernacle of the desert. And in that tabernacle, they put the Ark of the Covenant, the symbol of their marital covenant with God. And within that ark go the symbols of the covenant, the Ten Commandments, their marital vows. They put those inside the ark. They put the manna from the desert, this symbol of God's providing for them and feeding them. This then becomes the physical place representing the marriage covenant between God and his people. It's where they would go to talk to God. Moses, on behalf of the people, would bring the community into the tabernacle, this marital place. Of course, this didn't last forever. Once they were done traveling throughout the desert, they made it to the promised land, and eventually the tabernacle of the desert would give way to another place. It was the temple that was built in Jerusalem. This was now the new place where the people would go and communicate with God, that place, that physical representation of their marriage with Him. This is the temple that we find in today's gospel. Jesus goes into that temple, the place, that household where the people were meant to communicate with God and express their marriage covenant. So we can see then why Jesus would be so upset when the temple was being profaned, when it was being polluted by animals and money changers. He goes in to clean house because this was the place that was meant to represent God's covenant with His bride. So He goes in and he's turning over money tables. He says, this should be a house of prayer. This should be a house of love. And you've made it a den of thieves. So we can see why Jesus then would be so upset. Yet this temple that we have in the gospel later gives way to another reality. We know that it was eventually torn down. It collapsed. It was destroyed in 70 AD. And so then the temple of Jerusalem, that place of covenantal love, had to give way to another place. Where's that place today? Where's that place where we encounter the marriage covenant with God? It's not ultimately in brick and mortar. The place is in our own flesh, the place of the human heart. Just as Jesus spoke of His own flesh, destroy this flesh and I will raise it again in 3 days. That's the place now where God meets His people. It's in the heart. And we ought to display that same zeal for God's temple that Jesus did. I am the temple of the Holy Spirit. You are the temple of the Holy Spirit. And Lent is a beautiful time where we maybe need to clean house, to make a whip out of cords, to drive out those things that have accumulated and profaned our temples, that have gotten in the way of our marital covenant with the Father. Driving out addictions, driving out sins, maybe beginning an annulment process if you're in a marriage situation that's irregular and beginning to regularize that relationship. Because nothing ought to distract us from our wedding vows, the commandments that God keeps with us, united to Him in this bond of love.